And I am very pleased that Mr. Cook was able to come and present with us today. He is with Gedney Pickle Company, and I have spoken with him again several times on the phone, and each time I leave the conversation feeling more energetic and interested in my job than I was before. And so I'm really happy he's here, and we'll just like to give him a round of applause and welcome him up to the front.
I was going to bring a tape and play the Gedney the Minnesota Pickle song, but can anybody sing it? Can anybody sing the song? You've heard it. Gedney the Minnesota Pickle. Now, surprisingly, you haven't heard that for about 8 years, but the good news is we're going to start running it again, so you will hear that song. All right, Gedney is a company located in Chaska, Minnesota. We are a maker of premium quality pickles, and we are our entire production facility is located in Chaska, and we have been in Minnesota producing pickles continuously for 135 years. So we're not a new boy on the block. We've been around for quite a while. Most of you think we're strictly in the Midwest. You all know Gedney, but we have actually three branded lines. We have Gedney, which is in the Midwest. We have Cane's Pickles, which are on the East Coast, and on the West Coast we have Del Monte. And even though we do not own Del Monte, we license that. We don't co-pack for them. We actually license that, and we have total control of that label in pickles on the West Coast. Our company was founded by Matthias Anderson Gedney, and there's a picture of Matthias. And he actually founded the company in 1880. For some reason or other, our labels say 1881, so that's what we go with. But we moved to Chaska in 1958. That is our sole production facility. We made an acquisition of the Cane's Company on the East Coast in the year 2000. That was a mixed bag because it put us into bankruptcy, and we had to come out of it. We no longer operate that plant out there, but we make all the products in Chaska. And then our company was purchased from the family, the Gedney family, in the year 2010, and it's owned by PMC now. We have the Gedney line. I'm going to give you an ad before we get into the water. This is the partial line of the Gedney products. The most important one is the second one on the left, Gedney Baby Dills. That is our flagship. That is probably the pickle that virtually everybody in this room has eaten. And we do a fantastic job of producing that. We have our State Fair line, which Joshua mentioned when he was when he also mentioned that terrible name, Mount Olive. But this is our State Fair line. Every one of those recipes are Minnesota, the great Minnesota get together, the Minnesota State Fair blue ribbon winners. We have our Cane's line on the East Coast. We have our Del Monte line on the West Coast, and this just tells the general capacity. The biggest thing. We can produce at the Gedney Company in one day 500,000 jars of pickles in one day. So it's a fairly big production facility from a standpoint of pickle manufacture. Oh, I got to back off on that one. All right, now, to understand water usage, you first have to understand the nature of pickles. And pickles are the most misunderstood food item in the world. I mean, if someone asks you, what's your favorite pickle, you're going to fumble with kosher or little pickles or sweet pickles. If you want to look brilliant at the next cocktail party, if someone asks you what your favorite pickle is, the simple word is Gedney. Right? But there are two basic kinds of pickles. There are the fermented pickles, and these are the kind your grandmother made. She would take and in the growing season, get her cucumbers, wash them up, put them in a crock of salt water with some spices, put a top on it, stick it in the basement, and maybe a month later go back. And these pickles would be very, very salty to taste because they had to have salt in them to allow the fermentation to go. And these are the pickles that have been made for 2,000 years. But they are not the predominant pickle. The Gedney baby dill is the other type of pickle. It's called a fresh pack. It's a fresh cucumber that's washed. It is put in a jar as a fresh cucumber. You have the brine and some spices that go in there, and it's pasteurized. It's never fermented. Much crunchier, just a much higher quality pickle. Typically, a typical pickle manufacturer has got about 50% salt stock or fermented pickles and 50% fresh pack. The Gedney Company has really shifted to the fresh pack. We're about 80% fresh pack, 20% salt stock, and I'll get into why that is, because it's an environmental thing as to why we have shifted that way, and it's been a fantastic thing for us. Nature of the company now. The company has been produced, we've been producing about 2 million cases a year, growing little by little until the year 2011. And then we picked up a very large customer, and in 1 year we went from producing 1.8 million cases the previous year to producing 4.4 million in the same plant in 12 months. Radical change in what we did. And it really changed. It really put a lot of stress on our environmental attitude. But our company has always been an extremely green company. We pride ourselves for being one of the best Minnesota environmental citizens in the country, and we continue to do that. And in that light, we actually operate our own wastewater treatment lagoons. And this big shift in production put a lot of pressure on those lagoons. But this is a picture of one of our lagoons. We have a pair of resident bald eagles at those lagoons. We have ducks and geese on the ponds in the spring. The baby ducks and geese start to disappear when the eagles start to fly. And our eagles are very famous. They have been on the news many times. Now, where do we get our water? We have two deep wells that go down into the Hinckley Aquifer, 400-foot deep wells. We pump on demand, and if the plant needs water, it'll pump from one well. The demand goes away. When the demand comes on again, it'll pump from the other well. We just automatically shift from one well to the other. And the water we get is very high quality water. It's very hard, coming out of limestone beds. It's got an iron content, but it's an excellent drinking water. And we go through a treatment on that. We take and we aerate it as it comes out. The aeration makes the iron insoluble. We take it across a activated sand filter beds, filters out the iron. We then chlorinate it, pump it to a huge tank, and that's our fire protection and our demand to the plant. And we are controlled, our regulatory. For use of water, we have to have a permit from the DNR, and we do that on an annual basis. We have to test our water quality-wise by the Minnesota Department of Health because our employees are a public source of water drinking, and so we are a public source of water, so we have to have it tested. And we operate our own wastewater treatment system, so our surface water is all controlled by the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. Now, historically, when Joshua was talking, he was talking about cucumbers and the water usage agriculturally. Well, when you manufacture pickles, you use a lot of water also. And historically, when we were producing and we started producing more cases, we'd use more water. And that was pretty well true. This is back in the 70s. And that was pretty well true of just about any manufacturing company in the United States. Water was abundant. And to put it in point, when I came out of college, I went to work for a canning company. And at that canning, this impressed me the day I worked there. For every case of corn this plant produced, they generated 46 gallons of water, wastewater. And this was the biggest corn plant in the world. So you can imagine how much water they were utilizing. I went to work for Gedney, and that stayed impressed in my mind. And in the 80s, we started to realize that water was a precious resource in the state of Minnesota, and we had to do things to start treating it. And this was not an economic decision. In the state of Minnesota then, and in the state of Minnesota now, water is unbelievably cheap. It doesn't cost you money to use water. These decisions we made were environmentally driven, and we were very, very, very strong about it. Minnesota is the most water-laden state in the United States. It is adjacent to 20% of the world's freshwater supply in the Great Lakes. That's an amazing figure, 20% of the world's freshwater supply in the Great Lakes. And some of the strange things, if you're a developer in the state of Minnesota and you develop land, you have to develop that land so there is zero runoff. You have to be able to retain all your water. If you are out west, the rules are exactly reversed. If you are doing something there, you are not allowed to retain any water on your land. That just shows how abundant our water is. But still, water is Minnesota's most precious resource. And to give you an idea of what we did when we started, and this is just modern history of water usage, and if you look at this, in 2006, we produced 77 million, or used 77 million gallons for the cases we produced. And that doesn't sound like a lot of water when a municipality is using billions for drinking water. But it's still what we use. We were able to cut that down to 59 million with increased case production. Then we cut it down to 54, and then all of a sudden it jumps up to 69. But in 2011 is when we started producing this major paradigm shift of cases for this new customer. And in 2012, we were full-blown into producing the 4.4 million cases, continued in 13, continued in 14. In 14, we then got our act together, started conserving water again. Now, in 2012, if we had not done radical water conservation, for the number of cases we produced, that figure would have been 188 million gallons of water. So we did a great job of water conservation. And how did we achieve that? Here's some of the things we did. Some of these are straightforward. We put automatic nozzles on all water hoses. When I first went there, someone used a water hose, they put it down, it ran on the floor. Now they had to pull a trigger to make it work. And then you put water saver nozzles on there, it reduced the water usage by 50%. When we make salt stock, you have fermented pickles that come in there at a very high salt. And when you ferment them, you ferment them at 7% salt, but we're in Minnesota. And these are fermented outside. You need the sun to protect the surface of the tank so it doesn't get yeast or mold. So these are out tanks that are outside. So you have to salt them up. And we salt them up to the level of, at one time, 18% salt to keep them from freezing so we could use them during the course of the year. Well, when you bring them in, 5% is not palatable. And the taste now is down to about 2.5% is where people like to taste salt. So you have to desalt that salt out of the pickles. You put them in, you put water. And it was real easy to put more water than you needed, desalt them a little too far, and then put salt back in to get them at the salt level you wanted. Well, that was a double-edged sword. Salt we have to answer for in our wastewater treatment pond, so why remove more of it than we have to? So we became very exact at how much salt we removed. We improved our operating cooling capacitors on the pasteurizer, and what that was, we have pasteurizers that pasteurize the pickles and then cool them back down, and that's critical, cooling them back down for the texture of the product and the shelf life of the product. Well, when we first did it, you would take water from chillers and move them counter current, and as they got to the other end, you'd throw that water away. Well, we put in a great big cooling tower. We put in, but we couldn't operate our cooling tower in the winter because it would freeze up, so we put in a new cooling tower so we could operate year-round and used a lot less water. And that's improving the counter current in the pasteurizer. We also, in our pasteurizer, we use steam. Steam has got condensate. All that condensate was going down on the floor, and it was a lot of water. We now capture that. We send it to the other pasteurizer, and it's used to preheat that pasteurizer and heating. So it gets a double gain for us. We gain on energy and we use less water. We also told our cleanup crews, this sounds like a little simple one, but use shovels instead of hoses to move product. And they said, believe me, that was one of the hardest things to correct these people. You wanted to shoot one and nail them to the board and so the others would take note. But one of the biggest ones we did, we have heat exchangers. We have plate heat exchangers and we have tube and shell or scrape surface heat exchangers. And the cooling on one side of it was all with water. And we'd run the water through. As it came out, it developed heat that we'd throw that water away. We took and we made that a closed-loop system using Freon, recirculated the Freon, and that water savings was phenomenal. So that on two different places. We also contracted with, in 2013, with Minnesota Technical Assistance Program. We worked with Paul Pagel. And we did a grant with them, and they brought in an intern, Ryan Vantager, who was a U of M engineering student, and I had told Paul, I don't want him just to study how we can conserve water. He also has to study the effect of that conservation on our operation. And it had a huge effect, which I'll get into. And then another thing that we did, and I don't show it on here, we put in closed-loop fluming systems. We tried to eliminate fluming of pickles anywhere we could. At the canning plant I used to work at, it was 100% flumed. We have a couple places where we flume it, but we closed-looped it. So if we were coming out of a tank, we used the water in the tank, dewatered it, took the water right back to the tank until the tank was empty. That saved a lot of water in that regard. And then the biggest thing, think water conservation. And believe me, that's sometimes pretty hard to get people to do. Now, Joshua is up here. He mentioned Mount Olive. And I have to compliment Mount Olive. Mount Olive is the fourth biggest pickle company in the United States. We are the fifth. They are located in North Carolina. And their counterpart of me there is very big into water conservation. And they are doing what we are doing here, they are doing there. It's a fantastic company in that regard. Now, we encountered a lot of problems when we went into water conservation. Capital costs. We put in cooling towers, Freon cooling systems, chillers. None of that's cheap. And we have to be fiscally responsible to our parent corporation. The money doesn't grow on trees, nor do the cucumbers. But we had to be able to justify this, and it's really hard to justify water conservation for the sake of doing it as a good environmental citizen. But our parent company did go along with it, and it doesn't have a return on investment, but it's something we had to invest in, and it's something we did. The other major effect that water conservation had was on our wastewater. And we operate an NPDES permit, a National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System permit, under the auspices of the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency and the EPA. And we have parameter limitations we have to meet. So the major ones being biochemical oxygen demand, DO, suspended solids, pH, and chlorides. And if we do water conservation, these parameters concentrate most. So if you have a biochemical oxygen demand of 100 and you do a 20% reduction, suddenly your concentration goes up. BOD is easy to handle. Our waste is very, very biodegradable. So all you do is throw more horsepower at it, so you keep it in an anaerobic state, and you can solve it. So that wasn't an issue. And as you put more oxygen into it, you solve the dissolved oxygen problem. Suspended solids weren't an issue. Suspended solids arise from algae bloom in the summer. They don't arise from the actual wastewater, so that wasn't an issue. pH is a factor of we have organic acids in our waste, and as we satisfy the BOD, the organic acids are broken down to CO2 and water, and so that's not an issue. But the culprit was the chlorides. Chlorides are a non-treatable pollutant at the levels that they are in water, and that includes in the Minnesota environment right now. You have road salt that is contaminating every creek, river, stream, and lake in the state of Minnesota, and will continue to do so. And all it does is get in, and the only solution that is there is a dilution. And you can say, well, gee, you've got reverse osmosis and you've got high pressure membrane technology. Reverse osmosis will you can take salt and you can concentrate it to about an 8% salt level is the maximum you can do. And now you got an 8% salt level that is absolutely nothing but a hazardous waste. You have no place to put it. And that's the maximums you can get on both reverse osmosis and high pressure technology. Now you could incinerate the water, but that's very costly. It would work in some of the western states. It certainly won't work in Minnesota. And so we really don't have a solution in that regard. So what we did was, let me get to my next page. We started looking at ways we could eliminate chlorides. And in doing that, all right, here's some of the things that we were able to do. In 2012, we went through that huge water conservation, and we actually got limits of chlorides at about 2,000 parts per million. And that doesn't sound like a lot, but we had in our discharge permit, we had negotiated with the Pollution Control Agency, we had both a quantitative and a qualitative chloride limitation. And we negotiated the qualitative out, the concentration part out. We said, you are limiting us to X number of kilograms per day discharge of salt we can do. We will maintain, we won't exceed that level, but if our concentration is up, we'll discharge at a slower rate. And PCA said that. That's very reasonable. Well, then in 2012, the EPA published the whole environmental toxicity testing, WET testing. Everybody who operates a municipal treatment plant, everybody who operates a pond became subjects to this, and people were failing WET testing. And the WET testing for us, they gave us an organism. It was Ceridaphnia dubia, which is a water flea, and that organism has a tolerance up to about 1,710 milligrams per liter of chlorides, after which it doesn't like to live. And we were at 2,000. We were going to fail a WET. And so we had to start thinking, what can we do to change that? And by the way, if you go to an MPCA meeting where all the municipalities are coming together, the operator treatment systems are all tearing their hair out with the WET testing. But we took a very proactive look at it and said, all right, what are things we can do to reduce our chlorides? Because we can't take them physically out. And one of the things we do, so we started eliminating food service customers. And what that is, we eliminated selling to restaurants and people like Buffalo Wild Wings that were buying 5-gallon pails. And this was not something that was, when I showed that we had changed our salt stock makeup from 50% down to 20% years ago. That happened because in 1989, we realized that at that time, we were one of five companies that supplied the McDonald's company hamburger slices. Now, you can imagine how big that business was. One of five companies, and they protected their suppliers. We had a territory. Mount Olive wasn't allowed to come in and sell in ours. We weren't allowed to go into Chicago and sell in Vlasic's territory. And it was a huge business. But at that time, our chlorides were running in our discharge at about 5,000 milligrams per liter. And we didn't have any regulation against it at the time. But we had the foresight to realize that this was not going to continue. We made the concerted decision to give up McDonald's. That was one third of our business. We did that in 1989. Had a vast impact on our company. Looking back, it was a godsend because we would not have been able to continue operating our wastewater treatment system if we had not made that physical decision. when the WET testing came, we said, all right, we've got to do more of that. And so we did. We were producing a few food service product, and we eliminated those. And we're no longer a full service provider of product, but it's something that we felt we physically had to do. In doing that, back when we were supplying McDonald's, we had between 600 and 800 fermentation vats in Chaska. Today we have 102. And in reality, I've reduced those down that we're actually using about 60 of them now. We are really phasing out of the fermented pickles. We can't get out of it because your retail hamburger slices are a very important thing for us. We have to produce some of that, but we've really cut way back on it. Another thing is, I said we used to hold our fermentation tanks at 18% salt. We've cut that back down to 12%. Now, that hurts because we're in Minnesota, and anybody who lived through the winter from hell 2 years ago knows exactly what happens in the winter. It gets cold, and pickles at 12% will start to freeze in these 6,000-gallon vats, and there's some damage occurred. But it was a huge decrease in the amount of salt, and we did that. We also started doing something that other companies in the South had been doing, and that's recycling spent brine. When you ferment a tank and you empty it, you got the brine left. Typically, and this brine is very high in salt, you discharge it. We started saying, all right, we will take and we will reuse that brine on the next pickle tank. Now, there's a plus and a minus there, because what's in that besides a lot of salt? Herbicides and pesticides, residues. Yeah, so you can start concentrating other things in there. So it's something we can do to a limited degree. We can't do it to a huge degree. Another thing we started doing was bringing in salt stock. Instead of fermenting it here, we have companies that ferment it for us in Michigan or Wisconsin, and they ferment it. And when we bring it in without the brine. That helps us. Does it help the environment? No. It's a zero gain for the environment because Michigan's got to discard. So that was a short-term solution until we could figure out a better thing to do. So even though that, you know, we could look good in Minnesota, it wasn't the right thing to do. So we do that to a degree, but we are definitely going to be eliminating that part soon. We desalt to exact levels. Another thing we did was we reduced our salt in our finished products. Now, you only can do that at a limited degree because the American public has a salt tolerance, and it's at one time 3% was about what people liked their pickles at. Now they like them at 2.3%. The people's tolerance of salt is going down, and with it we take ours down. So as the public starts liking lower salt, we are quick to react to that. We require incoming stock. We get fermented tiny pickles out of India in barrels, and they used to come in at 18% salt. We require those to come in at 10% salt. That created a huge problem because these come in on the East Coast, and if they got impounded by the FDA for routine inspection in the winter, the FDA might take 30 days to get it done, and in 30 days these things would freeze solid, and they'd be lost. So the supplier said, we are not going to drop it, and they said, we won't buy from you. So what we did to counteract that, we try not to buy these pickles in the winter. We try to get them all of them packed in the summer and in the spring. A big one that's coming on is a thing called calcium chloride fermentation. We have been prime in the investigation of this. The USDA ARS station in North Carolina has done tremendous research. And typically when you ferment pickles, you ferment them at 7% sodium chloride. This method allows you to ferment the pickles at 1% calcium chloride. Huge reduction in salt usage. We've been in 2 years in experimentation in it. It looks extremely very effective, and we are going to continue it. We are phasing it in more and more, but one of the problems with it is we can't winter it. We can't ferment the pickles and put them in our tanks, because you try to put 1% pickles in a tank and put them through a wonderful Minnesota winter, and you will have a great big ice cube out there. So it helps. We've also been asked, we were asked by three municipalities this year, or 2 years ago when there was such a huge winter and the salt demand was so great, everybody ran out of salt. We had three municipalities come to us and say, hey, would you sell us pickle brine that we could put on the roads? And this got so intense that the PCA came to us and said, we want you to try this. Pollution Control Agency told us, and I went to them, I said, I respectfully decline. I said, that to me is an illegal discharge. I said, number one, I said, that's got BOD levels up to the neighborhood of 40,000, and we're putting it on the environment untreated. I said, secondly, people complain when they get salt corrosion on their car. What do you think they're going to do when they get salt and acid corrosion on their car? So we did turn that. Unfortunately, this has been done across the United States. There are several pickle companies that are selling their spent pickle brine to municipalities, and it's going on the road. And I tell you, it's going to play havoc on the cars. So that is not one of our solutions. But when we charged Ryan Ventiker to study it, these are the things he looked at. He looked at this whole dynamics of salt versus conservation, and it was a fantastic study that he did, and we are moving forward with it. In fact, we may be doing another project with MNTAP in the near future, but they're a great organization, and they worked well with us, and I think we worked well with them. Moving forward, we've been able to achieve water conservation. And we've been able to keep right now our salt level in our ponds is at 1,500. So Ceridaphnia dubia is happy. However, my goal is that we will continue water conservation at the level of 5 to 10% a year forever. We want to continue saving water. That is going to continue to put pressure on the salt level. We have had these discussions with the Pollution Control Agency, and they don't quite understand why we want to do that, but to me, water conservation is extremely important. We want to grow, but we want to be able to still be the great Minnesota citizen that we have been in the past. And this is really our motto. Minnesota's most precious resource is its water, and because of its abundance, it's easy to forget that it's an asset with a finite amount. To make sure that we always have adequate supplies in the future, we all must do what we can to preserve and protect the environment and the water. Thank you. Stayed on time.
Thank you very much. We have time for, I'm going to give you time for one question so that we can get to our next speakers. But you can also, are we staying for lunch?
Yeah, I'll be here for lunch.
Jim will be here for lunch, so you can catch him and ask him more about the work that they're doing. Is there any? Oh, we got one over here. Yes. Oh, yes. Thank you for the respect. Using the microphone.
Hi. Okay, this is kind of maybe an off-the-wall question, but you know, you hear a new food trend is like, artisanally crafted salts, like table salt. You know, you hear about like people are making salt on skyscrapers in New York City. I was wondering if this could be a possible solution to your brine situation, if you could, spread it out in big pools or flat areas and create some sort of, you know, Gedney artisanal salt.
Once it's in liquid form, to get it back to dry form, you have to incinerate the water. The cost would be horrendous. It couldn't be done. But it would be a great marketing ploy. Gedney salt from Gedney pickles. Anyway, any other question? Thank you very much.